Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, alongside former NFL general manager Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you, coming to you from coast to coast. As always, I am live at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Michael at his office out there in Jersey. And the bracket is officially set. So yes, have no fear. We'll get into plenty of NFL over the course of the next 2 hours. But the big news of the day, the field of 68 is set. Michael, March Madness is truly upon us.
Have you filled out your bracket? Are you ready to go? Or are you doing research? Are you going to get a little bit more involved here?
Okay.
What are you up to?
So I have a lot of feelings on brackets, and I'm curious your opinion on this, too. I filled one out this morning, just an initial gut one, and I hated it. So I ripped it up, and I need to start over from scratch and redo, because once I got to my final four, I was like, this is ugly. I can't do this. But what's your feeling on it? Do you do one bracket and call that the end-all, be-all sheet of integrity? Do you do multiple? What's your thought process on this?
I think you have to take the strategy of, you know, can you accurately predict the 8-9 seeds? Can you predict the upsets, right? Like you can't have it go across the board. It never does, right? And you got to figure out, like, for example, Houston's really vulnerable. They're the number one seed in the South bracket, but we know they've got a ton of injuries and they're not playing very well right now. We know they got beat out in the conference championship by, 30 points in the semifinals. So, you know, they're trending in the wrong direction. Do you think Longwood could beat them? Probably not. But could the winner of Nebraska, Texas A&M beat them? Perhaps. So I think you have to kind of strategize who's playing well, who's kind of, potentially could be upset. And, you know, I think that's really because there's no perfect bracket, right? I mean, anybody who tells you this, they got it. It's crazy.
It's going to be so ugly after round one.
You can't go on script.
Yeah.
You can't go on script. You know, how many Saturday morning we'll hear my bracket's a mess from about 9 million people, right? My bracket's a mess. You know, that should be the title of Saturday morning. My bracket's a mess. And it's going to be. I mean, because this is really hard. Because one of the things I've learned in sports is the best team doesn't win in one game.
Right.
The best team wins in seven, but not in one.
Yep, and that's quite frankly what makes the Field of 68 and what makes the NCAA tournament so unique is like anyone can win on any given day, and how far can that take you when it comes tournament time? And I like the philosophy of, right, like dogs early, chalk late. A little bit later on in the show, I'll give you some more detail on the straight up results and numbers for each of these seeds, the 16-1, 15-2, and so on and so forth. But as far as the bracket goes, like I am of the belief that you make one, you stick to your guns on it, because if you're making multiple brackets and you're bragging about the upsets that you picked, how am I supposed to believe, you know, if you picked the right 15 over the two, but how many brackets was that in 10? Like you picked that in one bracket of your 10. I'm not going to give you props for that upset. So I know some people do like the three brackets where you have one that's kind of the off the cuff, just gut feeling, one that you really research, and then one that's like, okay, I'm going crazy with the Cinderellas. I'm okay with that. I'm just of the believer you do your one, you stick with it, you see how far you can go.
But don't you think rewriting is better than writing? So like for me, every time you write something and when you rewrite it, when you go back and review it, it's always better than what you initially wrote. And I think that's the same approach you got to take on this, is there's an initial thought.
Okay.
But then you got to go back. But sometimes you second guess yourself. I knew that, right? I knew that. I think you can't fill out your bracket until at least you've read, you know, from our website, from all the stuff that we provided, VSiN.com, online. At least you've read a lot about all the teams. Because if you're just going to blindly pick them, then just go with the first one you go with.
Well, and so that's why I say the one that I did this morning, I'm tearing it up and I'm going to do my research and I'm going to have my one that I stick to my guns on. But the initial gut feeling one that I did this morning, I hated. I want nothing to do with. And so we're getting out of it. As the bracket did unveil yesterday, though, on Selection Sunday, Michael, you know, today is the day that we can get upset with the committee. Today is the day where we can say this team was snubbed. I hate these matchups that you put together, or this is great. What were some of your, aside from Houston, takeaways during the bracket reveal yesterday?
Well, I mean, I was disappointed that, you know, St. John's didn't get in. I kind of thought they might get in. Kansas State, I thought they might get win. They beat six teams in the tournament, right? So you're always disappointed with certain teams that don't get in. But the other thing is, I thought Tom Crean was great about, hey, look, you should keep playing, right? Go to the NIT. Go in there and let your team keep playing. Whereas a lot of these teams said, no. We're out. We're not going back. Obviously, I was very disappointed. I was hoping Indiana State would get in there too. But at 28-6 and they can't get in, it's kind of disappointing, right? But the records, it's interesting. You know, the records don't mean anything because we're sitting there and Michigan State gets in. What? They don't even have 20 wins. But the Big Ten was really good this year.
Yeah, and you have four 20-plus win teams that are in that last four out. You mentioned no Indiana State. Drake, of course, wins the Missouri Valley, so they're in that first four out. And the commissioner even said when he was on TV yesterday that outside of the COVID season, this was the toughest selection process that he'd ever been a part of because there were five bids that were stolen by automatic qualifiers this year. Like NC State had to win five games in 5 days and upset North Carolina in the championship game to punch their ticket. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been in. No way Oregon would have been in, but they win the Pac-12. Duquesne, UAB wins the AAC instead of FAU. Yeah. So they end up in an at-large bid. They even said New Mexico would have been among them, which the Mountain West is an interesting conference. You know, that's a league that I love so much. It's near and dear to my heart. They got six bids in, a record for the league, yet no respect in terms of seeding outside of San Diego State, which is, even for me as an alum to say, probably the one team that didn't actually deserve the respect. They got, you know, went to the national championship last year, so the respect comes from that, even though this is a very different team this year. But Nevada is a 10 seed, got dogged. Like, all of the bracketologists that I saw leading into this past week was there, you know, at the high end, maybe a 6 seed, at the low end, an 8 seed. They got a 10.
I mean, and if you look at KenPom, Nevada's the 36th ranked best team in the country, according to KenPom, using all his metrics, whatever they are. I mean, St. John's was the 25th best team in the country. They didn't get in. Wake Forest was 31. Villanova was 35. They didn't get in. So, yeah, I get your point on Nevada. Nevada certainly was, better suited at a higher seed when you consider that they're 36th in the country in KenPom. So a little bit of fudging. Indiana State was ranked 45th in the country and they don't get in. It's when you look at it on the lens of statistical analysis, you've got to wonder kind of how they went about what they decided to do. Certainly because of the at-large bids that get in, right? I mean, Akron would have never got in. Colgate would have never gotten in. Long Beach State, remarkable. Dan Munson, incredible. The 163rd ranked team in the country, according to KenPom, gets in. So you got to feel credit for that. And then Longwood. I mean, Longwood out of the Big South. I mean, they get in. Of course, they get to face Houston in the first round, which isn't always enticing.
I hope Monson goes guns a-blazing and that they're able to win one here in the tournament. That would be awesome. But the Big East, like to your point about St. John's, like they should not have been a three-bid league. Them, Seton Hall, Providence all had arguments, just unfortunate. Meanwhile, Virginia does get in, which who wants to watch that? Nobody. Neither here nor there. Another big takeaway was certainly that the East region, Michael, is a bear. You got the defending national champion UConn Huskies favored to be the first repeat champion since Florida in 07. They're 4-1 to win it all, earn that number one overall seed, but they are done no favors at all as we throw that region of the bracket up here. It is stacked. You got Iowa State, the Big 12 champs, who are in contention for a one seed of their own, an SEC champion in Auburn, who should not be a four seed. Speaking of KenPom, they're KenPom's number four overall team. Big Ten tournament champs in Illinois. FAU, who returned everybody from their final four run a year ago. SDSU, who played in the national championship. UAB, who won a conference championship. Like, I could just go on and on. It's tough. It is so tough.
And how about Washington State?
Yeah.
How about Washington State? I mean, Washington State's they keep beating everybody. I mean, I know they didn't win the Pac-12 title, but they're good. Mm-hmm. They beat everybody. And they're a seventh seed in this conference.
Which I hate that matchup that it's Washington State and Drake. And that was another kind of bone to pick I had going through the bracket yesterday. There are a lot of these teams that got matched up with each other that I would have liked to have picked in my bracket to win a couple games, but they play each other in the first round.
Yeah, I know. Look, at Thursday, there's nothing like it, though, right? You're watching those games on Thursday. We'll be able to have them on while we're doing our show. They'll be kicking, they'll be going in, those last couple minutes of the game, because anything could happen. I mean, could Yale beat Auburn? I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't think so. I think Auburn's going to dog them by 20. I think Auburn's ready to roll.
Yeah. I don't doubt it, you know, but I think to me there's going to be somebody on Thursday mm-hmm. that gets upset. You and I both know this.
Oh, yeah. And I mentioned I'll tease it with this a little bit because I dug into a lot of the round of 64 results on a seed by seed basis. But like the 15-2 is one that's particularly interesting. 11 and 141 straight up, the 15 seed beating the two. But a 15 seed has won now in three straight tournaments. So are we going to get another one this year? All three of those teams, by the way, reaching the Sweet 16. So could someone make a run? And we'll get into a lot more of this college basketball stuff with Thomas Gable, who's going to join us in about 20 minutes or so, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Find out which futures odds have moved since the bracket reveal. Which are some of those initial first round games that have already been bet or maybe had line movement on a specific side? And in hour two, your boy, Tate Frazier of the One Shining Podcast is going to join us, get some of his thoughts and opinions on how the bracket shook out. But also, we have lots of NFL talk to get to as well, Michael. And I know usually we reserve this for the regular season on a week-to-week basis, but we have a little overreaction Monday coming up here. Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm very excited because, you know, free agency's over with, Stormy. Yeah. We're on to the draft now. I mean, how about that? 1 week ago today, it started, and now it's already over. And, you know, people are taking visits, but for the most part, it's over. Now we're at a little bit of trade season. Will Stephon Diggs get traded? I think that's the next thing to watch. Or Ladarius Sneed. I think those are the two things to look at.
Yeah, in case you missed it, Stephon Diggs having some interesting tweets over the last handful of days. We'll get into that and more with Overreaction Monday in the NFL when we return on the Lombardi Line. We're just getting started.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Our website's had a refresh, brand new look with enhanced navigation and a mobile-first focus, but all that same great educational content right now. Full go on all things NCAA tournament and March Madness. We've got a betting guide looking at all of the regions, game previews and predictions, plus statistical straight up and ATS information you need to know. Again, check out the new VSiN.com. Also, a quick message from Total Wine. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine and More, but please drink responsibly. Must be 21. And I'm sure there were a lot of beverages flowing yesterday with this being St. Patrick's Day weekend. We saw Jason Kelsey's wife, Kylie doing the Irish dance at over all of the fans out there. So, I mean, lots of fun was had this weekend. Michael, did you get down with any green beer yesterday?
No green beer. Just had the corned beef. Yeah, absolutely. We had a party, you know, but no green beer. You know, the dye in the beer didn't look too good to me, but we're good. It was a good time. You know, it was good. It was nice weather here on the East Coast, which kind of teases you because we're still in the middle of March and you're kind of waiting for it to get, you know, warm again. But then you have a cold day like today. But it was good. You know, St. Patty's Day is always fun. You know, when I was in college, we used to go in the city and go to that McSorley's Ale House, which is up on the east side, and you know that was a blast. But those days are long gone, Stormy. You got to pay attention. You know, this free agency consumes you. You know, there's moves every single day, trying to keep track of them all.
Yep, brings back.
It's a little bit of a problem.
Brings back all the good memories. But yeah, we have free agency. We had Selection Sunday, so it was a busy holiday weekend. But let's talk to free agency because I mentioned before the break. Usually, this is an exercise that we do on a weekly basis during the NFL season. Overreaction Monday. But there's so many headlines, and now that the dust has settled a little bit on some of the marquee moves in free agency, it feels like a good time to analyze some of the reactions that we have had to the past week. And over the weekend, you know, Stephon Diggs is doing some tweeting, Michael. He tweets out to the public.
Yeah, we're ready, in that season. Yeah.
Ready for whatever. And changed his cover photo to a picture where it looks like he's waving goodbye. And this has some Bills fans in panic mode. You tell me, should fans be concerned that they're in for either another tumultuous offseason or their wide receiver one getting moved? Is this an overreaction to the tweet or the proper reaction?
No, I don't think it's an overreaction. I reported on the GM shuffle. He's available. If you want him, you can make a call. Now, I don't know what the price is. I don't know what that price is. I don't know what they would want back for him or what they would do if they got rid of him. But I think they're at a point where Buffalo knows he's really not the same player they traded for a couple, 3 or 4 years ago. You know, it's interesting. They traded a first-round pick. Minnesota picks Justin Jefferson. They get Diggs. They pay Diggs. See, here's what happens. You get this guy, and he comes in, and he helps you. But had they picked Jefferson, they'd be talking about an extension. Think about that, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where a little bit of free agency can be misleading, because you're buying quality. You're buying a veteran player. But, you know, at some point, receivers that get over that 30 number, they tend to kind of slide down a little bit. So I think this is what's happening with Diggs. 8 drops last year. He went from 13 yards per catch down to 11. Not the same player. Doesn't seem to take the top off the defense. His hands aren't the same. You know, and it isn't because they didn't have a good quarterbacking. It's because, you know, maybe he's lost a little bit. Now, will he rededicate himself and get the juice back in his lower body? We shall see. I think it's worth tracking the teams that didn't get Keenan Allen. Houston, which was in the Keenan Allen trade discussions with the Chargers, along with the Jets. Would Buffalo trade him to the Jets? Look, if they think he's done, why not? You know, but I think ultimately, at the end of the day, the Jets are still out there shopping. They've got Mike Williams from the Chargers in their building today. He's scheduled to talk to them. I think he's got Pittsburgh on the – also he's going to go to Pittsburgh and one other team before he makes a decision if he can pass the physical as well. So, yeah, this Diggs thing's real. It's not just off-season talk.
That's good to know. The Buffalo Bills are still a minus 230 odds-on favorite for Stephon Diggs to take his next snap, but there was also a time when Justin Fields was an odds-on number to go to the Atlanta Falcons, and we saw how that played out. To wrap things up on Diggs here, because you mentioned his decline, last 13 games, averaged 5 catches for 49 yards, had just 4 explosive plays, and did not have a receiving touchdown the last 7 games, including the postseason. Not screaming your typical number one guy with those types of numbers.
Yes.
I mentioned Justin Fields. He is now in a quarterback room with Russell Wilson and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Michael, overreaction or not that the Pittsburgh Steelers had a major upgrade from their quarterback room going from Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph to those two?
Well, I mean, look, Wilson's an upgrade over those other two. I'm not sure Fields is an upgrade athletically over those twos, but in terms of passing the football and making plays and winning games, you can't say that. I think that's pretty clear. You know, this rhetoric that's coming out now, well, they turned down more because they wanted to make Fields happy. I mean, this is comical, right? Like, your job as a general manager of a team is to do what's right for your team. If you're turning down second and third round picks to take a sixth in next year's draft, that's malpractice. So, look, I think Pittsburgh improved themselves. Now, the question is, Stormy, did they improve themselves with more than 10 wins? Because they won 10 games last year. See, that's what I don't think they have. I don't think they have improved over 10 wins. Do you?
It feels like we're just going to have the same old song and dance, because last year they got to 10 wins and they overachieved, right? But that feels like around the threshold it always is for Mike Tomlin. Are they going to be a team that wins a postseason game because of Russ or because of Justin Fields? I don't think so. I don't know. I'm having a tough read on this right now. Like, I need to see a couple games under their belt first and foremost. I want to follow up with this question to you, though, Michael. MVP odds? Tell me why Justin Fields is 50-1 and Russell Wilson is 120-1, even though Wilson's going to be the starter day one.
You can't convince people that Fields is an elite player. It's just there's such a gap between the reality of Justin Fields and the play of Justin Fields. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I've never seen, even this outdoes Trubisky. It outdoes Trubisky. It's remarkable.
Something.
No one will back off of it. I mean, there's still people out there. This whole rhetoric today about there were 5 teams calling about him. You know, he got traded for essentially a 7th round pick, because if on draft day, if you want to get a seventh round pick, if you're in the 7th round and you want to get a pick outright, you have to trade next year's 6 to get it. Okay. Well, that's essentially what they traded for to get Fields. So you can't change it. You got people online today on the Worldwide Leader talking about how great he is and how, you know, not to give up. And come on, stop. The league just told you what they thought. They just told you very clearly what they thought.
Meanwhile, the league told us very clearly that Kirk Cousins was the belle of the ball when it came to quarterbacks in free agency. Yeah. Is it an overreaction to say that the Falcons become instant contenders in the NFC with this addition of Cousins? In the NFC South, they went, the Falcons went from plus 110 to now minus 125. In the NFC, 14-1 to 10-1. Super Bowl odds, 35-1 down to now 22-1 this morning.
I think they've become a contender in the South. There's no question. They finished 7-10, didn't get good quarterbacking play. But the one thing I do know is you're never one player away, right? You're just never one player away. And I think it's still going to require a better defensive effort, which they should get from Naheem Morris. They've got the draft in front of them, which will help them tremendously. And they've got to be able to get some pressure on the quarterback. They don't have a pass rusher. Grady Jarrett's coming off an ACL. He's their best inside player. They need a pass rusher. They need an edge guy that can really help them if they're going to have leads in the fourth quarter to put teams away.
Good for Atlanta, coming off a mess of a quarterback situation since the initial decline of Matt Ryan with Ritter, Heinicke, Mariota. They've had six straight losing seasons. Now the question is, can Kirk Cousins, even if they're not a player away, big picture when it comes to a Super Bowl, are they enough to win a playoff game? He's had four playoff games, Kirk Cousins, only won one. Let's go to the AFC.
Yeah.
Is it an overreaction to say now that the Ravens and Texans are the Chiefs' biggest competition in the AFC?
Overreaction. No, I don't think that is an overreaction. I think they are. I mean, look, because they, you know, one team has the MVP quarterback, Baltimore. They've added Derrick Henry, who really defines their offense with more clarity, right? They're able to, they have to put him in the deep eye. They've got to put Lamar under center a little bit, and they're going to open up their play action pass. If you sign Derrick Henry to $8 million a year, you've got to get them the ball. You've got to make it worthwhile. I think they will. And look, Houston has done a really nice job of improving their defensive front. They've signed three defensive linemen. They've made improvements there. And I don't think they're done. They have a bunch of draft picks. I think Houston's going to be in play for another receiver as well. So I think ultimately they are a contender as long as Stroud continues to play. But I'm sure there's going to be other teams. But for right now, Miami has lost a lot of players in free agency. And Miami on defense, I'm not sure they're going to get back to where they need to be, even though there's a report that Chubb and Phillips should be ready for opening day. They're two best edge rushers. But still, it's going to be hard for them. One thing we learned about Miami, you can't outscore people in December. You got to play defense.
Yeah, and they seem to be letting their quarterback, needing that signing, at the expense of their defense and the pieces that they've been letting go. The Ravens are the second shortest shot in the AFC, plus 475. The Bills, Bengals, and Dolphins all ahead of the Texans, who are 13-1 for the AFC. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, joins us. We'll get into some college hoops odds movement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Selection Sunday is in the rear view and the NCAA tournament is upon us. The folks here at VSiN are here to help you out, where you can sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today and get your first full year for only $199 instead of the usual $240 price. And all you need to do is use our promo code for this show, Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year, including our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus our March Mania betting guide with best bets for each and every game and round of the tournament coming out today. Remember, use that promo code Lombardi. Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. Sign up at VSiN.com/subscribe. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we welcome in now on the Progressive guest line, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook out there at the Borgata in Atlantic City. As we continue to talk all things March Mania, March Madness, with the action getting underway, this is one of the funnest times of year. And from your perspective, TG, I know you guys have had these futures odds up for who's going to win it all for a while. Now that the bracket has been set and we know where people need to go in order to have success and the road, the path, where have you seen the most significant movement? Have any odds changed since the bracket's been set yesterday?
Yeah, we adjust some, obviously, because you have to remove teams that were previously in the pool that didn't make the tournament. So you have to take them off the board. And Obviously, you make adjustments throughout. So some teams' odds may get a little bit longer, depending where they're sitting, and some teams may shorten a little bit. So just a little bit of movement here and there. Houston went from plus 650 to 6-1. Iowa State was probably one of the bigger movements, 25-1 down to 18-1. Kentucky, we actually increased 20-1 to 25-1. Creighton, we adjusted 30-1 down to 25-1. Tennessee actually won 12-1 to 15-1. So yeah, just some slight adjustments there. Iowa State probably being one of the bigger movements though, 25-1 down to 18-1, getting that number two seed. Obviously there was some speculation they may actually pull a number one seed with the way some of those conference tournaments fell over the weekend. And North Carolina and Tennessee, who were Tennessee was certainly, I think, in the pole position there to get that last number one seed. And then between them losing their final regular season game there against Kentucky, and then losing in the first round of the SEC tournament, they kind of blew their chance. So they fell to a number two seed. And North Carolina, despite losing in the ACC tournament, they were able still to grab onto that final number one seed spot. So I think when you just look at the bracket right now and where people are positioned, at first glance, I would say Connecticut really wasn't done any favors by the committee. They have a pretty tough, tough bracket there to repeat. They have, obviously Iowa State is the two seed in that bracket there in the East. Auburn, a number four seed, which is surprising, but tough road there for Connecticut to get through there. You see some teams that these mid-majors, I would rather see not go up against each other, but it seems like the committee is dead set on getting some of these eliminated right off the bat. So like you have Washington State against Drake. I would have rather seen those two programs play somebody, some other teams there, but not each other in the first round. But there they are, the 7 and 10 seed matched up in that one. So I think out of the number one seeds, I would have to say probably I like Houston's chances and the way the bracket falls for them on first glance, and probably UConn has the toughest one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the South. It looks to me like if you're Kentucky, right, the South, you're the three seed there. You know, we know that, they can play with anybody. Marquette has struggled to beat UConn. We know that. And they're the two seed. So it looks to me like if you're in that South and if Houston's not 100% healthy, you might have a path to get there without having the obstacles that Connecticut has to face with Auburn as a four and Iowa State as a two and all the situation that you're getting to in the East.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, you touched on the issues there with Houston, and I've actually been bringing this up for the last couple weeks now with them, where they are not healthy. They have lost a couple of key reserves, and guys who are starters have been banged up. And I was of the opinion, really, for the Big 12 tournament, they should kind of just coast and kind of take it easy through there. And if they lose, they lose. Not a big deal. They're still going to be a number one seed for the NCAA tournament. They really, the focus for them needs to be on getting healthy. And getting as close to full strength as they can. Obviously, some players are lost for the season. We know that for them. It's health for them as well as the inevitable offensive droughts that we see from them. And, other really good defensive teams like Iowa State. Does anyone think Iowa State is going to be able to play themselves into a Final Four without having to go 5-6 minutes in a game without scoring? Probably not. They're going to have to withstand that. It happens to them. Same thing with Houston. They can go through these offensive droughts. So when you're paired there in a region with the likes of a Kentucky who can score with anybody in the country and put up a ton of points, it's going to get interesting there. You touched on Marquette as the number two seed there in the South. They're getting back to full strength. They were without their best player the last end of the regular season and then through the Big East tournament. They should be back to full strength for Shaka Smart there as we get to their first round game against Western Kentucky. So I think Marquette, you're going to see a little bit different team from Marquette than what we have seen in the last couple of weeks, which is good for them. But again, Houston, I think it all comes down to their health.
As you look at some of these first round games, TG, everybody is looking for the underdog to make a run, right? Like, what are some of those popular dogs that you're already seeing be bet? And in terms of line movement this time of year, like, do we see the most movement right here, right now, initially on those sharp line moves, or is it when more of the public gets in closer to game time? So a little two-parter there.
Well, you certainly saw some line movement last night when the odds went up. I'll tell you, the two teams right now that have attracted the most money and most wagers for any of the first round games are both dogs. One is a very big dog, and that's Morehead State. They have actually attracted the most handle and most bets of any first round game. They're paired up against Illinois there in the East. And actually opened them 13.5 point dogs and currently down to 11.5. So that game has moved 2 points from where we opened it last night. And the other dog that has been very popular since these numbers went up last night is UAB. Obviously, UAB had that great run in their conference tournament. We were able to beat Temple in the championship game yesterday. They were a popular bet yesterday. And the bettors got rewarded for that game. Now they face San Diego State here. And currently that game is sitting at 8 right now. I'm sorry, 7.5 currently right now. And UAB, though, has been taking money. So probably will get down here to 7 rather quickly. But those are the two most popular dogs. And again, in the first round, that's typically what you see with bettors, especially even with the public. They like to bet dogs in the first two rounds of this tournament. And it's just kind of a phenomenon you don't see during the regular season so much of any sport. But for some reason in this tournament, that's where the betting public kind of gravitates to are the underdogs. And especially when you get into these props like the first to 15 points and so forth. Everybody takes the dogs in those because you get some decent prices and, you know, it's kind of instant gratification. Everybody loves to bet those props. And a lot of times they'll be able to cash and make some money quickly and get it right back into play for future games.
TG, what is the most favorite prop? Is it the first to 15? Is that the most favorite prop out there?
For sure. For sure. I mean, it's just so popular during the tournament and, you know, you can just kind of feel it in the book when a team is almost there, when they're at 12 or 13 points, and it just builds and builds and builds. So those props for this tournament, it's so popular.
And then you have the non-sports betting people that are walking around and they see a game that's only a few minutes in and they're like, what's going on, when everybody erupts
exactly.
And freaks out. It's awesome. Thank you so much, TG. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Thanks, TG.
Thanks, guys.
Thomas Gable, follow him at Borgata Sports on X, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Speaking of props, when we come back, we're going to look at some props for season-long futures within the NFL. We got player props available already in March, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook than right now, as we've got a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Do not wait. Make this happen now. All you got to do is download the DraftKings app using our code Lombardi when you sign up. $500 bonus bet for every 1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings. And it's time for a little better's choice. So we're going to play a game of Would You Rather as we look at some of these future season-long player props. And we're looking specifically at players, Michael, who are on a new team or have a new contract or both, you know, depending on the situation. And let's start with Kirk Cousins, who we discussed earlier, the newest addition to the Atlanta Falcons. I know we don't like to talk about a team being a quarterback away, so let's just talk about his player number specifically against Russell Wilson. So would you rather have 4,500 plus passing yards for Cousins or 30 plus passing touchdowns for Russell Wilson, both in that plus 425, plus 450 range?
I think I take the yards for Cousins because I think he is going to throw it. You know, I do think the one thing would lean me about the touchdown passes for Russell is that with Arthur Smith, they're going to run the football and they're going to run. And I think you're going to see more runs, especially in the red zone. So for that, I would lean towards the yards because Cousins can do that magnificently. And I think they've got enough ability to throw the football in Atlanta with Zach Robinson calling the shots, kind of running the offense that Cousins is familiar with. So I just feel like that would be a better situation because there is going to be more balance in the Pittsburgh offense than perhaps with Atlanta.
Had 4,547 yards in 2022 and was on pace to exceed that number last year before the Achilles injury. So we would rather take Kirk Cousins. And again, plus 425, that season-long prop number. Russ, of course, coming off the 26-touchdown season this past year. How about Saquon Barkley to go over 7.5 rushing yards, the newest addition to the Philadelphia Eagles, or Josh Jacobs to have over 7.5 rushing yards as he joins the Green Bay Packers?
Rush touchdowns. Okay, I probably will go with, let's see, you know, one thing, Hurts scores a lot of touchdowns, right, on the push from the 1 yard line. They get it to the one. They're not handing it off to Barkley. They're going to hand it off to Hurts. So let me go. I would go Jacobs here at 7.5 touchdowns. He's going to be there. One thing Jacobs gives the Packers is the combination of Aaron Jones and, even though they signed A.J. Dillon back, a power back. And I think you're going to see that in the goal line. I think I would easily play the Jacobs one here, not because I don't think Barkley's a good short yardage runner, just because the Eagles already have the best short yardage runner in the league and Jalen Hurts on the tush push.
Yeah, that's a makes a lot of sense just from a reasonable explanation standpoint. With Jacobs, do you see this as him getting back to the guy he was a couple years ago when he was the NFL's rushing leader? Or, I mean, I know you think that, like, do you think that that's what he has the capability of getting back to in this new position?
I think if he's healthy and he's rested, I think he can certainly do that. With the skilled players on the outside that the Packers have, along with their tight end, this offensive line is very good. They're going to have to replace Runyon in the offensive line, but we saw what Aaron Jones brought to the team late in the year. This Jacobs is very dynamic in terms of his ability to, you know, run, break tackles. He wasn't the same player last year. He really wasn't. And whether it was the holdout, missing camp, missing OTAs, which I think is critical for guys that, especially for running backs who are like boxers, they got to stay in shape. So, but I think this will be a good year for him. And he's on this 1 year contract. I know he sounds like he signed a multi-year deal, but the Packers structured this deal into 3 1-year contracts. So if he doesn't play well, he'll be back on the street.
6 touchdowns, 805 yards in 13 games this past season, but of course had 12 touchdowns in 2022, 9 in 21, and 12 again in 2020 as well. Again, that prop, 7.5 minus 115, the number. Two guys that got new deals and got paid. Justin Madubuike over 9.25 sacks at minus 110, or Chris Jones over 11.75 sacks minus 110. What would you rather do?
I think I'd rather play Madubuike only because, you know, I think he's got a better chance at, you know, Jones is just, he's doubled every single play, you know, and I think to me, he helps the edge rushers more than anybody. Now, the one thing that Madubuike benefited from was having Kyle Van Noy and having Javion Clowney on the edges, that certainly helped him inside. They've lost both. They haven't signed neither player is anywhere right now, but it doesn't seem like Baltimore's going to sign them back. They're going to need to replace that for him, because what you want is you want that outside pressure, force the quarterback to work vertically in the pocket, and then there's your three technique going to eat him up.
The Vikings, for a moment, I'm sure, were very disappointed when Greenard did not stay. But it's okay, because Danielle Hunter is coming over from the Minnesota Vikings to the Texans. You know what I meant there when I said that. Over 10.75 sacks for him, or Brian Burns now with the Giants over 8.75 sacks, -120. What would you rather take?
I think I'll take the lower number at 8.75 sacks. I mean, Burns has never really been a double-digit sack guy, but with Kayvon Thibodeau on the other side, I think that helps him. And, you know, he's going to get a lot of opportunities, especially in some of these games. So, you know, Danielle Hunter, that's a low number, too. I like both of these plays here because Hunter should, but I think Will Anderson's going to get his share. I'll take Burns only because I think Will Anderson will get his share of plays.
But I like that you're like, you don't even have to decide. Just take them both over. Both have opportunity here in these defenses.
I think they do. I think they're both good numbers. I really do. I kind of was surprised by that. You know, the only thing on Hunter is, you know, he's had those moments where he's been injured and he missed some time, but now he's back again. He's a good player. And their front, you know, when you have enough guys in your front where you can get your best player singled up, that really spells you got a really good chance to do something. So I think to me that would be an ideal play to play.
The Colts and Michael Pittman got a deal done on a new 3-year contract. His yardage prop set at 1,050 and a half. Yes. We're putting his prop head to head with Calvin Ridley, who surprised everybody. Not only did he not re-sign with the Jags, he didn't go to the Patriots either. He ends up with the Tennessee Titans. His number at 875 and a half. So would you rather Pittman over 1,050 and a half or Ridley over 875 and a half, both -110?
I think I'd take Pittman here because I think Pittman's going to get the ball. I don't trust Will Levis to get Ridley the ball. I really don't. I mean, I don't trust that. And so I think to me, if you double Ridley and the ball's going to Hopkins, where it goes, can they protect? They cut Andre Dillard, their left tackle, who was not very good last year. They signed him to a 1-year contract from Philly. A lot of question marks about the offensive line in Tennessee. They want to throw the football, but can they? Are they going to be good enough? I'll go with having Anthony Richardson returning, Pittman being the lead dog and getting him the football. I'll take that play.
Okay, I like it. Speaking of Ridley, let's go to the Titans again. Tony Pollard's rushing yards set at 800 and a half, as is DeAndre Swift 850 and a half as he joins the Chicago Bears. Who would you rather have in pocket there?
I think I'd take Swift here. I'm not sold Pollard's healthy. If you study Pollard at Dallas 2 years ago to the Pollard last year, not the same guy. Plus, you got Spears back there, too, the draft pick who's going to share carries. I mean, they paid Swift $16.2 million for 2 years, right? It's a 2-year deal. It's not a 3-year deal. It's going to void after two. They got to get him the football, and they're going to have to run the ball effectively to take some of the pressure off their rookie quarterback. So I'll take Swift here over the yard total.
The Browns love bringing in former first-round picks and just seeing what'll happen. Let's look at Jerry Jeudy for this one. Over 3.5 receiving touchdowns for him at an even money price, or Deontay Johnson as he joins the Carolina Panthers over 4.5 touchdowns.
I'm gonna take Jeudy. I think they'll get Jeudy the football. Look, the thing that's going on in Cleveland that I can't put my finger on and understand is how many quarterbacks are they going to sign? They signed Tyler Huntley over the weekend to go along with Jameis Winston, to go along with Dorian Thompson-Robinson, to go along with Deshaun Watson. I mean, who has four quarterbacks, right? Who has four? So I think something's going on there. But I like Jeudy at this number. 3.5 is not a lot. Cooper's going to draw the coverage. I think they'll get the ball to Jeudy. I think it'll be a good game, a good season for him. And I think it'll be a good environment. I'm going to go there with that.
Michael, the Browns are just thinking ahead because they needed 5 last year, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Joe Flacco, comeback player.
I mean, I don't know. You know, yeah, I mean, look. And then they didn't even try to sign Flacco. That's the amazing thing. They signed two quarterbacks on veteran deals and didn't even make an attempt to get Flacco. What is going on in that building, Stormy?
Oh, Lord knows, Michael. And that's a team, too, that, like, every time I think that they're ready to take the step forward, they don't put it together. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen this year, especially on defense. Will they be able to play defense at home and on the road is the big question for me when it comes to this team. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, resetting with hour two. Boy, that hour went by fast. We got lots more college hoops to discuss and overreactions in the NFL.